from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
Same old problems with the Cubs. Now they are in a situation before the trade deadline, a lot of conversation. I don't think there's going to be much activity.
But the only thing I would say definitively is that, like, I think making moves simply for 24, you know, given where we are, is probably not what we're going to do.
They're kind of stuck. They're not playing baseball in a way that's very convincing. The only thing you're convinced of is that this might not be the year.
Now they got the Brewers, right? So if it's going to be the year, it better happen starting tonight.
And the 2-2. Driven in the air, right field. Back goes Felix. Still going. That ball is gone. A line drive home run. Ian Happ. Cubs trying to beat the first place Brewers. And the 0-2. A little tapper slowly toward first. Bush has it. Cubs win the ball game.
The good news, you got the opportunity.
Our job in the clubhouse right now is to make it tough on Jet.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Come on.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Force a rental. Force a rental buy. That's the motto of this week, Mr. David.
Morning, Molly. Yeah, it's Tuesday, and it's the day after Jed Hoyer pretty much conceded the 2024 season, I think, and then the Cubs went out and won a game anyway. But very surprising pregame conversation from Jed Hoyer. Maybe we shouldn't have been that surprised. Look, that's for us to do, isn't it? To say,
right?
Well, the Cubs should do this, and the Cubs will do that, and they should stand idle, as we talked about yesterday and discuss on a daily basis. It surprised me that the Cubs team president, a week before the trade deadline, essentially took themselves out of the conversation for a lot of moves that we had previously considered. Nothing this year. No move that they make in the next week is going to affect or improve their chances to win this year.
Well, I don't want to pick nits.
Well, please do, because that's the way I think I interpreted it.
What he really did say was that no rental pieces. So, in other words, if they could get someone that has multi-year control, they wouldn't buy someone for the end of this season. But they would buy someone that would help them moving forward.
Okay, hypothetically speaking, let's think big. If that still leaves the door open, as you suggest, to, let's say, Garrett Crochet.
Well, he's not a one-year player.
A guy like that, under contract, team control, you give up the small fortune to get him.
Right.
All right, fine. I didn't hear that. I didn't necessarily hear that. Now, he left the door open, what we need is someone, say Suzuki's interpreter, to interpret what Jed really meant.
Well, he's saying not someone for just this year.
I know.
They're not getting Aroldis Chapman. But could they get someone that would be part of it moving forward? Normally, if you're not interested in adding to your team in the right now, then you're not really looking to make the trade deadline the
moves.
Place where you stick your flag in and say, oh, we're going to buy a guy completely overpriced that can help us for the next 3 years.
Both things are true. I think the scenario you paint is it's plausible. It's realistic. It's certainly within the confines of what he said. I'm not expecting that.
No, I think what you heard is exactly what he said, which is we're not looking for a quick fix this year.
And why?
That's what he said.
And this is why.
Because they're not ready to win this year.
They're not good enough.
They're not. He even mentioned that they lost a lot. They went through 3 months of kind of subpar play.
18 victories by the end of April, and right. Then everything fell apart. Right. I don't know why. This is a team that's underachieved. And I did wonder as a kind of listened to parts of it again and tried to decipher what the signal was, if there was any kind of hidden message. I did wonder for a brief moment if this was strategic in saying this when he said it at the beginning of the Brewers series,
yeah,
in a way to motivate this team to prove him wrong.
Well, they won. They won the first game. If they get a sweep of the Brewers, will he think differently?
I think that he left that door open a little bit ajar, if you will.
He mentioned a winning streak. I don't think it's a 3-game winning streak, but if they put a couple of series together.
It's baseball. It's possible. Right. So I think that he did leave some wiggle room there. I think that Jed is as accessible as anybody. We say it all the time. I was just a little surprised that he was as definitive as he sounded with a week to go.
Well, if they had lost last night, we'd be playing funeral music because it would be the understanding that, okay, now they've lost 3 of 4 to start the second half. Mm-hmm. That's not the team. This isn't the year. And I think everyone would have kind of accepted that. The fact that they won the game means, they're alive in this series. Not just to win the series, but the sweep is still alive, which I know – feel free to laugh out loud. It's scornful. It's a ridiculous comment. But in order to win the series, you got to win the first one.
Yes.
In order to sweep a series, you got to win the first one.
Absolutely. And they did that with a good bullpen effort. Javier Saad was wild, walked 6 3 1/3, and didn't give up a run, which is remarkable. It was the first time, did you hear on the broadcast, it was the first time that had happened since. Zach Gallen did it against the Cubs with the Diamondbacks over the weekend.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
That's hysterical.
But I think that the bullpen came through. They win a game. They get a reprieve, I guess, for another day. But it doesn't feel like there's a whole lot of internal confidence that sometimes you feel after these talks that the Cubs are going to turn things around.
No, there is very little of that.
It's almost like a resignation, and they're accepting what they aren't.
Right.
And this year, the team president is suggesting they're not a playoff team.
I'm not arguing that. At this point, I may have an argument for you by midweek.
Well, I mean,
that's what we're hoping for.
I may be pounding my fist on the table, too. Like, go get this. Go get that.
Exactly.
But that's the beauty of baseball. I just think that I don't, you're always somewhat cynical. So you wonder if it was intended to maybe motivate some guys or to make whoever he's negotiating with or talking trade with step up a little more. Like, if he's talking about this secret trade or whatever, whoever he's dealing with privately, publicly he declares, well, we're not going to do anything. And then somebody says, did you see Jed's pretty loud about not doing anything? Does that mean we have to up our offer?
Right. That's a good point.
You wonder.
Yeah.
You wonder.
Yeah. I mean, it's, again, I think when what do you call it in the NFL? We talk about trade time, it's lie time, right?
Yeah, flying season.
That's exactly correct.
And I think this is baseball's version of that.
Sure.
As we get near the deadline, some of these rumors, you don't know the source of them. You don't know the intent or the strategy behind them. But we do know that the Cubs are in a position now where they sound like they're going to stand pat. They'll make a deal if it makes sense for 2025.
Right.
Which also leaves open the possibility of trading one of their veteran relievers. You're hearing rumors now about Neris, Mark Leiter Jr., guys who could have some value in playoff-bound teams' bullpens. Maybe. Mark Leiter Jr. was good last night.
Yeah, I don't think now's the time for that either. I think we're kind of, I have expressed my kind of antsiness waiting for the Sox to get to all their multiple trades. I'm worried they'll run out of time before they can trade everyone. But I think the Cubs should be waiting. I think the Cubs.
I do too.
Yeah, I think. We'll see what happens.
The Jameson Taillon stuff didn't do anything for me.
Right.
I don't even like the idea of unloading Mark Leiter Jr. to a contender. that the Cubs apparently aren't, because I just don't know the value of what you'll get in return
versus what you get
versus
from him.
What you potentially yeah. could still have in him. So I think that he's trying to thread the needle here, and I think he's also responding, not intentionally, but to what we discussed yesterday. There's this assumption that at the trade deadline, either you're going to be buying like crazy or unloading and selling like
yes,
crazy.
Maybe neither.
Maybe neither. Cut right in the middle.
And the thing to remember as well is that, it's an important thing for him to come out and talk about, because the Cubs are spending a lot of money compared to other teams in their division. They do have a much higher payroll. You did hear from Pat Murphy earlier in the week, who basically talked about the two pitchers they have that they're hoping to get back. That is really the only trade deadline stuff that they're going to get is injured players back. They do not have the opportunity to go out, and the Cubs do, because they have so much money. And they're, but to say, well, we're not looking to spend more money. We're looking to live up to some of the contracts we have here. Even if you didn't say it that way, you kind of said it.
Kind of said that. And so we talk about what he meant. We can interpret what he's going to do and try to figure that out. But I can tell you, I don't want to speak for a lot of Cub fans, but it's somewhat disappointing to hear the team president with the team who's 3.5 games out of the wild card spot with 60 games to go in a season. Yes, we can be realistic about what the Cubs are and how disappointing they have been, but I still think that as a fan, you do reserve the right to, think that the impossible is possible and the Cubs can somehow go on a streak and win 8 out of 10, and all of a sudden, oh, they're a game and a half out? Oh, well, the wild card spot. Why were you idle?
Right.
Why did you give up? Give up now.
But I think that all along they've been sort of talking about, let's see what happens. We heard that before the All-Star break. We've heard that it's several different times in the course of the season. I just think part of the problem, once again, is that when you're the team that spends, your fan base develops this sort of Beowulf syndrome where you think the great hero is coming from the outside to save the season, to save all of our behinds, when in reality, you kind of need that internally.
That's every fan base.
But there are some fan bases that know, well, they're not going to go procure anyone.
Sure. But the Cubs aren't one of those.
No.
They're not.
The Cubs have done it before, and they'll do it again.
In Chicago. They're in front of a full house on a Monday night against
the
Brewers.
Always.
They have a $230 million payroll.
Yeah.
And yeah, I respect and understand intellectually about, we're going to see what happens and we're going to be conservative. Yes, see what happens. But the fan in everyone says, go make it happen, yeah. Jed.
Right.
Go figure it out, because you want help to supplement this lineup.
But
that
if you conclude that there's no part-time help that's going to get this group better, then it's probably a wise move.
That's head over heart. Yes, absolutely. And that's always going to be the smart way to go when you're running an organization.
Sure.
I can respect that. But the heart says, what are you doing playing the Brewers with Miles Mastroboni and PCA in the lineup at the same time? How do you expect to win anything and contend with that meager offensive attack? Go get some bats.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, they need bats. Even last night, it's not like they scored 15
runs. Three
runs. Yeah.
And it took an Ian Happ line drive to kind of make you feel better about it.
I know, man.
Happer spent about an hour on the station yesterday.
Yeah,
didn't he?
Maybe he should do that every day.
Every day.
Huh?
I mean, superstitious?
I know this is an insane comment, but listening to him with Dan and Lawrence and Layla yesterday made me feel like it was aiding him to have that outing. When he performed the way he did, I thought to myself, like, more guys should come on because it makes them more aware of what people are thinking and what the questions are here.
Yeah, what's the connection between his appearance and his thought process and his success?
You're living more in the moment because you realize that it's all about right now. And
right.
I'm not saying that other players don't know that, but it was certainly driven home to him.
I think so. I think he's a very cerebral player.
I agree.
And he's definitely introspective. And The Cubs definitely needed that home run last night. You never felt comfortable because it was the Brewers and because it was the Cubs bullpen. But
I mean, you mentioned it. When you get a couple outs, then you walk three guys and you go 3-0 on the next guy. It's extraordinary that you get out of that. It just doesn't happen in the world.
Javier Saad was walking a tightrope.
Wow.
And he's not quite back to being what he was for about a year. And he's not been the same guy since, which is why I go back to, we alluded to it before the show, why would you be dangling Jameson Taillon when you're not so sold or certain anymore about Javier Saad?
Well, you know why.
Money.
That's it. That's
do not dump and that's salary.
Why, well, that, but that, you know, that was what we talked about yesterday.
I know.
If they were to do that, that's exactly, that would be exactly what they would be doing. And that, unfortunately, is not going to play in Chicago.
No, it's not.
Not on the north side.
It's a bad look. It's a really bad look. Last night, the bullpen came through. Drew Smyly, probably one of the bigger innings that he's thrown in a while. He came up with a really clutch outing. Tyson Miller. Then we mentioned Leiter Jr., Porter Hagenaris. They use five relief pitchers. Goodness sakes. They did it the Brewers way. And Assad was nothing more than an opener, essentially.
Right.
Walk six and three and a third.
Three and a third, yeah.
Yeah. But didn't have it.
No.
Didn't have it. And yet didn't give up any runs. He was living right. They got some decent defense. And I think that was, okay, it's one game. Now they got to go do it again. And then they got to do it again. Sweep the Brewers.
That's it. That's it. Live in the moment. Get through this particular, get through this week by winning. And who knows? Who knows how things
turn? I like that. Who knows? We'll talk to Taylor McGregor, 8 o'clock. She was there last night doing a good job.
She knows.
She knows. So we'll ask her.
We don't know. That's fair.
Meanwhile, switching back and forth between the Cubs and the Sox.
I don't know why we even bother.
I do want to bother. Okay. I do want to bother because this bugs me.
They lost in spectacular.
Spectacular.
They were literally a pitch away.
Yes.
Literally one pitch away.
Brebbia.
And
well,
and
obviously instead, you paid attention.
Well, no. I Dustino, I'm watching. I just don't wish to speak of
it. Oh, I got it. Okay.
Do you understand? Yeah. It's just so painful to even talk about it because we're really not supposed to be watching. They're telling us not to watch.
And, they are kind of telling us.
They're
not
hoping
to watch,
you don't.
Yeah.
They're hoping you don't. It's a bad product.
Oh, it's the worst.
It's a bad product right now. I shouldn't look at it that way, or we shouldn't frame it that way. After five innings, it's a terrible product because the starting pitching is worth watching.
Right.
Because the starting pitching, whether it's Fetty or Crochet
or Thorpe yesterday was really
Jonathan
good.
Cannon, really interesting.
2 days ago, excuse me.
And now that they have eliminated Clevinger from the mix, they are watchable for five innings. And that's about it.
Yeah,
Little League game.
The only reason you signed Clevinger was because you thought it was cheap and you can move him. So the idea that you had to pull the plug
move
on his rehab.
Like move him to back to Cleveland.
Yeah.
Or San Diego or wherever he came from.
The other one was just being in the same position, the rim with Yoan Moncada, the two of them, they had to pull the plug on their rehab.
That's
I guess Moncada is just feeling sore. He had gone like 8 of 16 or something, but he doesn't feel any better where he's hurt, which apparently is not unusual. It's not unusual.
None of that mattered to me. I really didn't care about any of that pregame stuff.
No, let's didn't fast matter to
forward.
Me either. Yeah.
Let's fast forward to the ninth inning.
Oh.
How in the world do they let a base runner steal third without anybody covering the base?
I said to you this morning when we discussed this that I understand that the player's not making the play, but that's also managing. That is also, you are not reminded or told or held accountable to make the play. They have like some of the worst baseball
terrible
mistakes.
Instincts, none.
In the country. And that's not just on how horrible the player is. That's to the accountability. That's to the discipline. That's to the manager as well.
That is all managing. And so what happened was runner steals third and then a base hit. You knew it was coming. Up the middle, ground ball, seeing eye single. I don't know if Luis Robert could have thrown out the base runner or not, but it certainly would have been worth a try Maybe the base runner doesn't try to score. So it's still bases loaded or runner on third. You still have a shot. Instead, stealing third ended up tying the game, and you end up losing in 10, and you knew it was just inevitable. But
you're walking people. I suppose there's like certain guys you understand if you're going to walk them, that guy can beat you. But you're like the decisions that you're making that get you to that loss are awful. And they're being made by someone that is on a short-term deal that is only here because you don't feel like paying two managers. I used to think there was a certain nobility of, well, we don't want to blame him. It's our fault. That's all nonsense. They just don't want to pay
two managers. They don't want
to pay him. That's all it is.
They
just don't want to pay two people. That's it.
And it was Wyatt Langford that had stolen the base and then ended up scoring on Himes' single.
Didn't he then get the key run at the end of the game?
He got the game winner.
He got the
he got the game winner. Yeah.
I'm just saying.
He's in the middle of a lot.
Yeah.
He was in the middle of a lot. I tell you what my new favorite, I don't know, White Sox kind of game is every morning after they lose a game like this. They've lost 8 in a row now.
Is it getting out to your car and then just slamming the door into your head?
I did that before I went to bed. Helped me sleep. I was like, oh, boy.
It's much harder to
I'm wobbly
drive in
now.
With a swollen brain. Okay.
So I like to go to the website to find out how they're going to present this loss.
Oh, God, that's hysterical.
The headlines are hilarious. And I respect the fact that they're trying to put their best foot forward. And they are what they are, and we know what they're not. Today, Fetty continues to prove value as trade deadline approaches.
Well, I mean, he was fine.
That's not the headline.
He wasn't the problem.
Okay. Yep. Yesterday, I forgot to mention this.
True
after
Thorpe, something
after,
about.
It was, Thorpe's gem has Sox thinking of, quote, something special on the other side.
Yeah. There you go. That's nice.
Before that, can White Sox replicate Royals' turnaround in 25?
Oh, my God.
You got to give credit to the people writing the headlines for keeping a positive attitude. But they're not watching the games.
Also, you're scaring off people from going to the website because you want spin, get your spin.
Well, maybe some people want the spin.
Does anyone want the spin?
I don't know.
Don't you kind of want the truth, or are you desperate to avoid it?
Depends on your perspective.
Yeah, I was watching the end of that game, and I wondered to myself, why am I sitting here watching the end of this game instead of just going to bed and burying my head in a
masochism
pillow? It feels that way.
It's very masochistic to be a Sox fan right now.
Yeah.
Rough one, though.
I do. I wonder sometimes, why did I pass this down to my children? And the girls don't really seem to care, but my son did suffer with the White Sox for a while. And it's an awful thing to do to a young lad.
Well, eventually you'll have to apologize. I told you about 2 weeks ago, my mom sent me a text apologizing for making me a Cubs fan when they were really hitting the skids.
Did you let her off the hook?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Or did you just not talk to her?
I mean,
No.
I mean, I got to tell you, I mean, your folks might want to rethink some things just because you're not just a fan. It's really your whole life.
Your folks might want to rethink some things. Oh, man.
No,
we have to break in 60 seconds. I don't know if we have enough time for all the things they need to read. Well,
oh, boy.
I don't mean you specifically, but you're not just a fan. Your like obsession is palpable.
Fan, short for fanatic. Dustin is a fanatic.
No, he's worse than that. He like his mood on a daily basis is impacted by it. Well, you can come in the morning and tell how they did if you didn't want to watch.
Hmm.
Don't you think?
Well, I got the "you should be happy this morning" comment.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
You play into that a little bit. Yeah.
Well, but I didn't mean it negatively. It was just like almost a relief. It was like, oh, thank God, no walking on eggshells around Dustino.
Yeah, I think that's probably a lot.
It was a nice win. You take them one at a time. That's why I like to treat them like Bears games, because it's a absolute roller coaster, and it keeps you. If you just tomorrow, the next series, like then what's the point of watching and listening if you're going to treat it like that? You should if you're going to invest 2.5 to 3 hours a day of it.
Flow to the game that's different than other sports. And it's, you know, kind of the the, you know, the voice of summer, the background noise of summer. It's not supposed to be.
Well, for what you're it's also my job.
Well, that's true, but you would watch it anyway, right?
Yeah. It's,
you'd be really crummy at your other job if you left because you'd be up late watching the Cubs.
Your
then,
vocation comes from your evocation.
You'd be like, oh God,
you could have been.
I don't think I'm gonna be
like
prepared for this case today.
Public accountant and been a Cub fan.
I was thinking
a
lawyer
of like that.
That's gonna walk in
he'd be a good lawyer.
Like,
I thought maybe
tired.
A proofreader.
You're inviting that kind of.
See.
Oh really? A proofreader?
Yeah.
All right. First word.
We're gonna get ourselves in trouble.
Hallis?
Oh boy.
Yeah, I know. There's only one L. I'm trying to break that habit.
Yeah.
I do it every time. I look at it. I know I'm wrong. And
it's,
I,
okay. It's such a
at least
key,
I know.
It's
at least
such
I
a
know.
Key word to
at least
know,
you know. At least you do
given
know.
Given our role.
But considering that we don't publish it, it's just about pronunciation.
It's all that matters.
Yeah.
Pronunciation.
So we'll discuss, among other things, what happened at Hall S. Hall last night.
We will pronounce yesterday. Everything correctly and talk about Hollis Hall.
H-A-double-L-A-S. I don't think I put two S's.
It's just a joke.
I got the fat finger on one of them.
You're beautiful. All right, we've got the pick six next. We'll tear apart all the stories of the day. Big happenings in Olympic basketball for all those watching. We were all exchanging texts, so I'm sure we were all watching.
Big happenings at Hall's Hall.
And there is much to do about all that as well.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
Well, we'll get into it. It's Mully and Haw. It's Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 the score.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Pick Six, sponsored by Affinity Whole Health. Do what I did. Visit Feel Great Illinois to learn more about their testosterone therapy or their weight loss options. What is your reaction to last night's Cubs game? Will it or should it hold any sway regarding the trade deadline? What was the biggest moment of that game?
Yes, it should hold some sway. I mean, the Cubs now have won a couple in a row. Keep winning, and have a big win week, and maybe that has a sway. So that it was an important game to win because you can't get anything going against the Brewers unless you win the first game of that set. So let's go. Let's see what happens. To me, the game, getting out of the bases loaded jam early, I feel like the Brewers did not play a great baseball game.
Sloppy.
I feel like they, sloppy's the word. And they, you know, when you miss opportunities, those come back and bite you in the hind portion of the program sometimes. So I think that's what happened here. I think that had they gotten anything done at that moment, it'd be a different game altogether. And I think that the Cubs managed to win that game. It was a very close game, 3-1 game. They managed to win that game in large part because a wasted opportunity by the Brew Crew. So I'm all for that, by the way. I think that's a wonderful thing to have happen. But I really is... You know, as opposed to saying, you know, I mean, the Happer home run was huge. That's a big deal. Michael Busch getting a couple hits. Dansby Swanson, good to see him get a couple of hits. Stuff like that matters. But It also matters when you have an opportunity, your opponent has an opportunity, and they can't get something done. So I think that bases loaded situation, and we've seen it happen to the Cubs when, you know, on Saturday, when whatever inning that was where they got second and third and they didn't get anything out of it, that will bite you. And I felt like that happened to them, and I felt like it happened to the Brewers.
Yeah, so it's a great point that the Brewers were sloppy. You had an error. You had the pass ball. Talkman scores right on that pass ball. You know, not only the third inning, Mully, you're right about that, but then in the fourth inning as well, there was another bases-loaded opportunity. So you had two back-to-back innings with bases loaded, and the Brewers were not able to capitalize. And in both of those innings, the Cubs scored. So they got out of it in the top of the third. Cubs scored in the bottom of the third. They got out of it in the top of the fourth. They scored in the bottom of the fourth. So that's also huge. You get out of it, and then you put a run on the board. You get out of it, you put a run on the board. So you can tell, thanks to the Cubs winning and Affinity Whole Health, that my mood this morning is excellent.
That's excellent. I can tell you a little spring in your step. It was the final out that was the most important one, because there was a runner on third, two outs. Hector Neris is on the mound, and you just wonder what the heck is going to happen next. And then William Contreras grounds out, I don't want to say feebly, but to Michael Bush at first base. Michael Bush, by the way, becoming a very good defensive first baseman. His athleticism is showing, and I think that's a good sign. But it wasn't until then, let's face it, it's 3-1. There's a runner on third. There's two outs. Neris is capable of blowing that. We've seen it before. You probably are going to see it again. So that, to me, even though the escape act for Javier Saad early was important, even though Dansby Swanson made a nice play, the bases loaded, I think, early on to get out of one of those jams, that was important. Ian Happ's line drive homer to the basket was important. But until Neris got the final out, I didn't know if any of those would matter. So that was probably the biggest moment of the game. Will it hold any sway regarding the trade deadline? Absolutely. Because if they had lost, we would have been, basically beginning the eulogy. Because Jed Hoyer started it, we would have continued it, and it would have been ongoing. As it is, this is somewhat of a reprieve. You can still talk in terms of the Cubs sweeping the Brewers and what that might mean. 3.5 still is a number that matters, because that's how many games the Cubs are out of the wild card spot. So, yes, it did hold sway, and the biggest moment was the last out.
As a leader, I think you shy away from those questions.
Was Jed Hoyer's pregame declaration the Cubs are unlikely to add before the deadline a concession speech for 2024? Do you agree with Hoyer's premise? What do you think he announced this so publicly?
Well, the biggest takeaway, what he said, was this is not the conversation I expected to be having. I don't think he should have had it. I think it was way too early. And this is sports. This is basically walking away from a game when you're down 10 in a football game in the third quarter. You still have some time here. I thought we had agreed yesterday that up until 72 hours before the deadline that they were going to take it up to then, like they did last year, like most teams do every year. This is a week out, and Jed's tapping in. All right, tapping out, whatever. I'm surprised, and I don't know if it's strategic. I don't know whose attention he's trying to get. This is the in-season equivalent of the off-season intelligent spending. It certainly can be defended. It certainly is rational. It's definitely something that you look at, it's head over heart. There's nothing wrong about what he said, but there's and everything right about his approach. I just don't know why you need to announce it or declare it now, even though it's the likely path. I don't know how public you needed to be about it. I hope that he has to backtrack. I hope that the Cubs go on a winning streak and he has to retract his statements, or he doesn't have to say a word, because there's something that is on your Twitter feed that says Cubs trade for Big Bat, whoever that might be. That would be fun. Unlikely, but fun.
Unlikely but fun. I'd agree with that. A little surprised about the timing, but this is when, you know, typically he talks. He talks ahead of a homestand, and that's what the Cubs are doing here. They're starting a new homestand.
Started Friday.
He was busy, he said.
Started Friday.
Well, but he wasn't free.
I'm just saying.
Okay. But he wasn't free. And now they're starting, arguably, then, if you want to say it started Friday, they're starting their last series of the year, which is kind of wild. The schedule makers, I'd love to sit down and have a couple of McUltras with these people. How in the world you're playing the Brewers for the final time as we start the last week of July makes no sense to me. Almost as little sense as the Angels opening up the 25 season against the White Sox at 35th and Shields. But that's a whole another story. Fine. Hopefully it's been done to motivate that. Hopefully that's why he did what he did. He was busy with the draft and the start of free agency and all or the trading deadline heating up when after the All-Star break. So maybe this is motivation, and so far so good. It worked for one day. If you were able to get out of a 6-walk Javier Assad start and win that game, anything's possible.
You know, I think it takes some guts to actually come out and say that we're not going to get any rental players to help us right now, that we're going to take our lumps and we're going to look at the future. I think that's a very unpopular thing to say. And I think everybody wants you to take whatever prospect you have and flip it for someone that'll help you win two games. Maybe that's the difference. And, you know, listen, the team you put together isn't good enough, so make more mistakes putting together a team. That seems to be the general feeling. I didn't mind what he said because it made sense to me. And I didn't think he said, we're not bringing anything else in here. I think what he said was, we're only bringing in something that would help us beyond this year and help us next year. And I don't see that as a white flag. I heard that expression bandied about a little bit. I don't see that a white flag.
Teams rarely make trades like he's describing in season.
Yeah, but a white flag, I saw a white flag trade. It happened on the South Side. It's when you start selling people, even when you're within shot. Because, this is probably isn't going to happen. That's giving up on something.
White flag was a reference to a trade. This is a media session.
No, but that's what I'm saying. I heard people say, did the guy wave a white flag on the season? I don't think he waved a white flag on the season. I think he just put it back on the people that aren't living up to their contracts. And he said, basically, that maybe they do something if they go on a winning streak this week. Something along those lines. I mean, maybe I'm looking at it differently, but I don't know what I expected the Cubs to do. I mean, like if they went and got, you know, the Oakland closer, isn't that a move for the future? Isn't that a move beyond this year? And I'm not saying they do anything like that, but if they went and get somebody from Toronto, wouldn't they want to sign them and keep them? I mean, I don't know. I think they need help beyond just this year. And I don't know that I want them to make some kind of quick fix. I also think they probably should have brought Candelaria back.
Well, yeah, that's hindsight. But
yeah,
I think,
I'm just saying. They made a move last year to bring a guy in, and they let him go the minute.
They did. The offseason, it was a big glaring hole
right. That
they did not address.
I agree.
Asks you a different question on a different topic.
That is the voice of Mike Florio. He's here to talk NFL, talk some Bears with you guys at 8:44. Are you surprised to see the Bears rotating centers? Ryan Bates, Coleman Shelton at center with the first team. Were you expecting a legitimate competition at that position? What's more important at that position, competition or continuity? Do you believe the OC, Shane Waldron, when he says Caleb Williams, quote, has a great comfort level with either or right there, end quote?
No, I don't believe that. I don't believe that he has a great comfort level no matter who's at center. I think you want to have a center that you have a certain chemistry with and a certain understanding with. I think that they're trying not to make the same mistake they did a year ago and just give the job to someone based on the fact that he should be the center. So I think it's wise that they're holding a competition for the position. I think it would have been wiser if they got a guy to just play the position, period, end of story. But they they feel one guy can do it, and they clearly want him to be the guy that does it, and the other guy might be better positioned to do it and has a better understanding of the offense if we're to understand what's been said. So it's a weird one to me, just because the continuity of an offensive line is one of the most important things that you have in football. You need those guys to know each other, to be able to play next to each other. You don't need a team with a kind of a rotation, and we're going to work on it, and we're going to shift it around, and this today we're going to try this guy and that guy. You would like to have a feel for everybody that you're playing with, whether it's the quarterback in the center in the right guard, the center in the left guard, whatever it is. So I think getting that resolved sooner rather than later is the best move to make. But you also don't want to have to make a change once you get into season. So I can understand why they're going through it, and maybe they're just doing their due diligence, but you would prefer if one guy were better than the other guy, and then you just give him the job, and then you get continuity in everything you're doing. So it's fine to do it like this for the right now, but I wouldn't be pushing it more than a couple of weeks. I think you better figure this out fairly quickly. And listen, things happen in season. You're always changing things up, and you're always, you know, doing it. It's just not ideal to create this problem. So I hope they get it figured out.
I hope they get it figured out. I mean, I wouldn't have expected anything else from Shane Waldron than what he had said. What I would be curious to know is, have Ryan Bates and or Coleman Shelton been involved at all when they were doing these get-togethers with the wide receivers, the tight ends, and the running backs, like the seven-on-sevens, if you will, where the actual center that is hoping to play in the actual games is doing the shotgun snapping to the quarterback? Were either one of them part of that? Because
like in the off season,
yeah,
I don't like think that's the mini off season. I don't think centers are invited to those things.
No. Well, but like my point is, maybe they should be. And you know, I know high school is very different than the pros, but in high school, when they do 7-on-7, when they do those set, there's like passing camps in high school, a whole separate thing. They have tournaments. Yep. They have 7-on-7 tournaments. The center goes with, so that the quarterback is getting used to the center quarterback exchange from shotgun. And it's not just like the coach, right? The center is just practicing
like out of the shotgun,
Right. And I'm curious just if either one of these guys were there from a comfort factor, just to get some rhythm going, because
who's paying a center to go to Florida.
Exactly. Well, not the Cubs. The Cubs would not take on that expense. That's an expense that the Cubs would not have taken.
Well, it's going to change the catering bill. I mean, that's, you know,
good point.
A lot center eat a lot more than wide receivers.
Caleb's got all that NIL money. He can cover that.
That's true. I think we're overthinking this a little bit. It's July 23rd, and the Bears don't know who's better of two guys who they've never had in camp before. They can watch tape, but it's difficult to evaluate that once you got them on the grass in person. So I don't have a big problem with them having this early competition to see who's better and the comfort level. I think the quarterback's input will be valuable on this. This is going to take care of itself. And I think if it doesn't, and they're still pretty even, the NFL has a way of having these things take care of themselves. Attrition is real. And you're going to have a point in time where you have two guards that really don't have a reputation for being that durable. And you have a guy in Ryan Bates who has experience at guard. You have depth at this position. So early on in training camp, I think you want to make sure that there is a comfort level with both guys. I do take Matt Eberflus, his words at face value. I do believe him when he says his quest is to build quality depth so he's comfortable with either guy. At some point in time, it's going to be clear to everyone who that guy is, who's better. You hear from Tevin Jenkins, Ryan Bates has taken on a more vocal leadership role yesterday. To me, that would be the odds-on favorite. Ryan Poles identified him once, identified him again. He's here because Ryan Poles, the boss, thinks that he's a good football player. My sense is he's going to start. Coleman Shelton gives you good veteran depth, and Caleb Williams will have to be ready to take a snap from either guy. That's what quarterbacks in the NFL have to do.
Can I ask Can I just interject quickly? If that's the case, David, if it is Ryan Bates, doesn't he need every snap?
No.
Really?
Well, I mean,
is he a center?
Yeah, he's a center.
No, he's not. He's a backup center. In Buffalo, there was a starter over.
Well, he's going to be if he's a starting center here. Well,
that's what I'm saying. Should he get the reps? The other guy knows the position already.
Yeah, I'm not talking necessarily about a pick six or something like that.
Voice of Brad Biggs, 7 o'clock, Biggs time right here with Mully and Haw. Do you like seeing Montez Sweat make his official debut at number 82 on the NFL Network's top 100 list? Should he rank higher? Has the move to the Bears helped him get more national attention?
Probably so. The move to the Bears makes a lot of sense because it allows him to be on a bigger stage because he's the best player on this defensive line. That wasn't the case in Washington. So that is a big part of that. I don't think it's too low. I don't think it's necessarily reflective of any snub or being overlooked. Last year was the first year he had double-digit sacks. So he's coming into his own. He's entering his prime. He had 12.5 sacks, 6 with Washington, 6.5 with the Bears, led both teams for the first time I think that ever has happened. Lead both teams in sacks in the same season. Montez Sweat is an ascending player. He's the Bears' best player on defense, but he's still on the way up, which is good news for everybody. Next year, if things go according to the plan and this defense lives up to the considerable hype, he won't be 82.
Yeah, I think it's fine. These lists are fun for us to talk about, and you can feel slighted as a fan. I hope he feels slighted as a player, because you like to have a motivated pass rusher on your side of the ball.
You know, I think the guy has been everything they hoped he would be. I think it was a great, great trade, and he was the right guy, and he works his rear end off, and it's kind of extraordinary that they got a player that good, and they needed one, and he's a guy you craft your game around. I like the idea that he was, a first-time Pro Bowler a year ago, and now you follow with him going into the top 100. I think you can sell that to people. I think if you're the Bears, you can sell that idea. You come to Chicago, you're going to get a lot of attention. We're a young team on the come. We're going to win a lot of games, and we're going to take care of you, and it's going to be, special. Being on this team, the guy has been everything you wanted and more. I think he came in here. What I keep going back to, and I know it's what should be expected of everyone. But when you get paid and you still produce in the same way that you were, that should be the standard. Unfortunately, it isn't. There are a lot of people that get paid. They haven't gotten paid before, and the money kind of helps them to slow down and take their time and rest themselves and kind of have a different attitude. This guy plays exactly the same way that he was playing before he got paid. So I respect that, and I think he is better than the 82nd player in the NFL, and I think it will be expressed moving forward.
What I was going to say to your question there, or your statement,
that's Taylor McGregor. She's here talking Cubs at 8 o'clock. What do you think of Team USA basketball? They had struggled so far, barely eking out a victory over Germany after struggling mightily against the South Sudan men's basketball team. Do you think they can flip a switch, as they apparently think they can? And what's missing?
Well, there's a lot there. And I think what's missing is, when you put a team together, it is a complement of players. There are different players that do different things. And when you think about basketball, there are different things that you need from different players. Now, when you're spoiled for choice, you end up getting players that are kind of duplicate pieces and maybe better, as opposed to better at one thing or another. But they've got shooters, they've got scorers, they don't really have defenders, they don't really have try-hard guys. They don't really have players that are known strictly for defense only. I think there's a balance to any kind of group. And I think when you put a team together, you need to kind of reflect the need for different things. What happened in that game is what's happened in a couple of games now. And frankly, their perimeter defense was god-awful. I mean, they're even late in that game, there were two instances where guys went to sleep and they stayed inside, and three-point shooters had wide-open looks. They bounced the shot out. Wide-open looks. I mean, no one within about 5 feet of the shooter. It was incredible to me that you could get to that point in a close game and not close down shooters. And I think that they made a lot of threes in that game as a result of that. And they had some unexpected threes from unexpected sources, talking about Germany. But, you know, LeBron took over the game and won the game at the end, and that was great to see. And they got players that can do that. But, man, are they going to play like that? Because they are an uninspired bunch.
Yeah, uninspired is a word for it. And, you know, just taking a look behind the curtain at what we were talking about yesterday together, you know, I have to give LeBron James some credit. When they needed it the most, he stepped up and took over that game, scored the last 11 points.
Right.
He gets going downhill. He is very, very hard to stop. That's an understatement. But they need somebody, you know, they need like an Alex Caruso. I mean, part of the problem with these teams, it shouldn't be an all-star team. It should be a team where you have certain guys to do certain things. And again, Alex Caruso wouldn't start, of course, but when you need somebody to come in and give a burst of energy, a guy that's going to kind of play both ends of the court really, really hard. It reminds me, going back to the 1988 United States men's Olympic team, coached by John Thompson. It was the worst showing we've ever had. They got a bronze. And they had one three-point shooter. They had one, Percy Hawkins. And that roster was destroyed by people like us back in the day about the construction of that roster and why it was put together the way it was put together. And then it flopped the way it did by having a bronze medal. I think that was the last of the college kids playing in that game versus other teams that were, quite frankly, playing pros, right? They're professionals, older guys, but they were more a team. They were always working out together. So I think when they need to, they will. But I mean, be careful if you're investing in this team, you know, to cover 20 and 30 point spreads. Yes,
Molly. I was going to say, Percy Hawkins, local guy made good, went to Westinghouse, was more of an interior player as a high school kid, went to Bradley? Is it Bradley?
Correct. Bradley University.
And then learned to be an outside shooter at Bradley, believe it or not.
Great shooter.
But he was like the lone guy that could hit a three on that team, and that did him in.
LeBron James, great American, carrying the flag on Friday, carried his team yesterday. He's dominant, and he's unstoppable in situations like that. This was him reminding everybody just who he still is. This is not a team that was the best basketball team they could put together. This was the best all-star team they could assemble. And what it's missing is role players. You need character actors in any ensemble cast. They don't just, you have a bunch of stars and they have to learn different ways to develop chemistry. And they're clearly still searching for that. They don't have anybody that's willing to do the dirty work. LeBron, as great as he was down the stretch, made some business decisions earlier in the game that reminded you just how reluctant superstars can be to get dirty and maybe dive on the floor the way Alex Caruso might have, the way a role player might have. So that's what's missing. Also, what's missing so far, motivation. They know they can flip the switch. They know they're the best in the world, and they may be proven wrong. They've got their hat handed to them by South Sudan, nearly lost that game. Yesterday, similar type of response from Germany, but I think they can flip a switch because right now they just aren't really feeling like they need to go all out, so they're not, and this is the casual approach. I think once the games tend to matter, you'll see a different result.
I got one more question.
All right, one more question. Are you a bit gobsmacked to see TNT's parent company, Warner Brothers Discovery, submit a matching offer for Amazon's C package, part of the NBA's new 11-year $76 billion, yes, I read that correctly, $76 billion rights deal? The Amazon package is believed to be around $1.8 billion, but contains language for a multi-year payments up front, which could require as much as $5.5 billion from cash-strapped WBD. How pleased are you that Charles Barkley and the guys at Inside the NBA appear to be saved?
It's a very complicated story. It's a very surprising headline. I don't think that many people outside the industry and maybe some people inside saw this coming. I thought that we had seen the end of the Inside the NBA and just TNT's parent company broadcasting the NBA games. This is a loophole. This is the clause in the contract. It's very complex. To me, it comes across oversimplifying it as a $5.5 billion gamble on Charles Barkley. This is to me something that could further establish Charles Barkley as the most powerful person in sports media if he's able, and this is goes the way that it could go. If they get the NBA back and everything is just as is, and this is the reason why else would they have done it if not to just save this show or to save the relationship with the league? It's extraordinary, the amount of money at stake here, and I think it's just as extraordinary, the level of risk involved.
Well, luckily, since this is sports talk radio, depending on how you look at it, I am not gobsmacked over this because I have something to say about this. And if I'm understanding gobsmacked, I'm often to the point of being speechless on a matter. This news is leaving me speechless. This is far from over. As David said, it's very complicated. This is going to go to court. There's going to be lots of attorneys making lots of money. I'd be gobsmacked over the checks that these attorneys are going to get. It's a great show. I still can't believe that Charles Barkley would actually retire than take a three-letter network or a four-letter network or Amazon or Netflix or whoever is getting all this, that he's really going to walk. That he's really about to shut it all down. That would be gobsmack to me, that he would really walk away from wheelbarrows full of money to comment on the NBA.
I got to be honest with you. I think gobsmacked is the perfect word here. Now, it means utterly astonished or absolutely kind of... It's literally gobsmacked. You know, shut your gob. It's like someone slapped you in the mouth. It's like you've been punched in the face and you're just stunned that that has occurred. But it means astonishment or some sort of real surprise over something. I was under the impression that there was no way that Warner Brothers Discovery, WBD, could possibly match this deal because of the poison pill that was put into it, which is that the people at Amazon were going to pay for the first 4 or 5 years up front. And it's my understanding that TNT's parent company is cash strapped and doesn't have that money and will have to borrow some of that money in order to put the prerequisite amount up front, if something like $5.5 billion. If that's the case, they're putting their business at risk by renewing this and by getting a piece of it. They were paying $1.2 billion, and now it jumps to $1.8, and then they got to put all that money in a coffer, so it's waiting for the NBA. That was how they were going to keep them out of it. Look, I think it tells you how valuable the sports franchises are. It tells you how much they value the Inside the NBA show, and it doesn't stun me that Barkley was thinking of quitting. He is 61. He'll be 62 when that contract comes to an end. And maybe he just doesn't feel like kind of restarting himself or reestablishing himself in the role he already does with people he trusts in the workplace and all the rest of it. So it makes sense to me that he didn't want to be a part of some other studio show moving forward. But I want to know more details about this because this is pretty, it's a very surprising turn of events just because I had not heard they were thinking about it. And the last I had checked into it, I was kind of under the understanding that they could not afford to do this because they were putting the whole company in jeopardy by doing it. But apparently they view it as the sort of thing that they're already down the road on and they want to keep trying it and they're putting everything at risk in order to get it done. So I'm pleased because I love that show. It's my favorite show on television. So We got the extra point next. We'll get right to it. It's a real good one. Mully and Haw on the score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Let's talk a little White Sox manager. Over the weekend, our guy Bruce Levine introduced the idea of Terry Francona coming out of retirement to manage the Sox next year.
Terry Francona is sitting at home in Tucson, Arizona, wondering, you know, can he continue his career? He's had a lot of health issues. He's a Hall of Fame manager in 5 years from now if he doesn't manage again. A great connection with the White Sox from the 90s when he started his career after he retired as a player and became part of the White Sox minor league organization.
South Bend White Sox at the time.
Managed a pretty famous basketball player at Birmingham.
Yeah. Number 23, Jordan. I believe.
He would be a perfect match, I think, for the White Sox because his history of development with the Indians was yearly.
What would your short list be? And will Craig Counsell's limited impact limit how much money teams like the Sox will be willing to pay managers next year?
That's a key question. You wonder if a guy like Terry Francona would be affordable for the White Sox. What is the going price for elite managers? The same question will be asked about Alex Cora, who is expected to be a free agent after his contract runs out with the Red Sox. That would be the beginning of my short list. It would be Terry Francona, see if he's interested. Alex Cora, will you pay for him, Jerry Reinsdorf? Can you afford him? Where else is he looking? And then Skip Schumacher from the Miami Marlins, who has been essentially uninvited to the party in Florida. That's a good start. Bruce mentioned Patrick Leyland, too. Patrick Leyland is Jim's son, who is in the White Sox organization. I guess that would be a name on the list. There's going to be a list. I don't think the Sox are going to bring Pedro Grifol back. They're essentially letting him finish the season so they don't have to finish paying two guys. But if I'm looking at next year's preemptive short list, it would be just that. Francona, Cora, Schumacher, maybe a younger manager in the system like Patrick Leyland. I don't know if that makes sense or not, and I think they should get somebody more established. And I do think that teams are going to ask themselves, is a manager worth what the Cubs paid for Craig Counsell? Let's hope that by the end of the season, the Cubs aren't asking themselves the same question.
The White Sox payroll is going to be real small next year, the way it looks right this second. So you could understand them. You're going to have to pay Terry Francona a lot to get him off the golf course, get him off the couch, get him off of whatever he's up to right now. You're going to pay him a lot of dough, right? But they need somebody to face the fans through the media every day that's going to get White Sox fans excited again about what's happening and be professional about it. Kind of John Fox-ish, if you will. When the Bears were going through what they were going through, at least John Fox was a professional football coach. They need to get a professional skipper to steer this ship.
You know, I find this fascinating. Bruce Bochy wanted to come to the White Sox, and they didn't want him. I think he's now 69, so what would he have been, 67 at the time? Tony La Russa is now 79. I think Terry Francona is young. I mean, you know, Joe, believe it or not, is 70. Terry Francona is like 65. I mean, he'd have plenty of good years left if he wanted to come back. And I would pay him money to come back. I think there's two questions. One is implied in this question that because of the amount of money that you're paying for a manager on the north side and the lack of bang for your buck, does that mean managers won't see their pay increase? That you'll still see that as sort of outside the norm. It's not going to the price for paying a manager isn't going to go up because Craig Counsell got paid, unless Craig Counsell starts winning. So I think that's really an interesting idea. Terry Francona would be worth whatever you had to pay him. And you play a lot better baseball, and he's a great baseball guy. I'd be more than happy to pay him. I don't know about these other guys. I don't know. I had assumed it was going to be the guy from Miami, but just because that was reported. But if they're really going to be interested in bringing in different looks at people, I like that there is a connection with Terry Francona. And he's a great guy, Tito. I mean, we'd be blessed to have a guy
like
that. LaRussa
would be the connection to Skip Schumacher.
Yes, that's my understanding. So that's why I feel like that's more likely. But this Pedro Grifol thing was a disaster. Now, who hired him? Was it Rick that hired him? And how did he hire him? How did you settle on him? He was going to do what they told him to do? Is that the idea? I don't know. But this has not worked, period, end of story. And if you look at how bad that team was when he was an assistant coach on it, how awful is his record with the teams he's been with, the two that he's managed and the team he was on a bench coach for?
Historically bad.
It's unbelievable how bad this has
been. Anybody got a connection to David Ross?
Does a good manager want to get paid if he has options, or does he want to win, or does he want to build? I think it's difficult. David Ross would be great. Add him to the list. Why not?
Okay, that's five.
That's fine. I'd add him to the list. Yep. But, they've got to get an improved manager over there, and be great if it was Terry Francona. I'm all for it. All right, 312-644-6767, Mullion Hall on the score.
I've said it, and I'll say it over and over again. Whether we win or lose, we got to flush this game.
Mullion Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 the score. Now that is how you deal with the season. That is the manager of Southside telling you what you got to do. That's how you handle stuff.
Yeah, it's hard to watch. Yeah, hard to watch. And we're talking about managers because it's something we discussed over the weekend. And I think it's an ongoing debate over Craig Counsell's value to the Cubs and the impact he has made. It's a good point from the texter when we talk about what Craig Counsell has done to the managerial market. Is that a fair question to ask when I referenced earlier they're in a big game in a must-win series and they go into it with Miles Mastroboni and Pete Crow Armstrong in the lineup? That's not a roster that you necessarily trust,
right,
in a big moment. PCA is struggling to prove he's a major league hitter. Miles Mastroboni started 10 of the last 15 games, I believe, and he's not an everyday baseball player.
312-644-6767.
That's not on the manager.
Yeah, let's try Ray's in Lincolnwood. Hey, Ray.
Yeah, you were talking about Francona.
Yep.
You got to remember the last two or three years in Cleveland, he missed a ton of time because of health issues. I think that's one of the reasons he retired. So before you sign him, right, you better check out his health.
Yes.
Forget his age.
Yeah, no, there's
no doubt about that.
Well,
that's predicated on the fact that he would want to come back and he's healthy enough to do so.
Yeah. Let's try Ron. Ron's on the south side. Hey, Ron.
Look here. I have to thank you guys so much for that event Thursday. I told Brandon, you'd have all my energy. I couldn't do anything for the following day, but guys, just a wonderful, wonderful event. The audience, you know, happened for me, having an opportunity to meet Dustin and Brent, and of course, you two wonderful guys that I enjoy every morning. So I even had a chance to talk to Mitch for quite a while. So I just have to say that, guys. You all are simply the best. And the last caller made a good point that he did have some issues with health. But he is a great manager developing pitchers. And as we have been talking about, that appears to be the strength of the White Sox. So he would be actually my choice, but hopefully, like you said, but you definitely have to make sure that he really wants to do it. You know, we don't know. You know, he's been away from the game, but Terry Francona is a great manager. But we would want to make sure that he still has, you know, the hunger and wants to get back in the game. So that's my comment. But the one we have now, I just can't wait till he's gone. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Ron.
Ron, you're the best. Yeah, that. First of all, it was a great time the other day. Really enjoyed it. And thanks to everyone who came out. And thanks to Mitch and everyone who put it on. I couldn't agree more with what Ron has to say. I mean, it's fun to think about who could come in, but just looking to put this whole kind of episode of Sox history behind us.
They just are in search of credibility. They're going to have to go into the offseason seeking that, starting right there, and then going from wherever direction they're headed. And we're going to know more about the direction they're going in the next week after Chris Getz gets done dealing.
We'll be right back with our guy, Big Z, and we'll talk to Brad Biggs next, Mully and Haw on the Score.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the Extra Point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Let's talk a little White Sox manager. Over the weekend, our guy Bruce Levine introduced the idea of Terry Francona coming out of retirement to manage the Sox next year.
Terry Francona is sitting at home in Tucson, Arizona, wondering, you know, can he continue his career? He's had a lot of health issues. He's a Hall of Fame manager in 5 years from now if he doesn't manage again. A great connection with the White Sox from the 90s when he started his career after he retired as a player and became part of the White Sox minor league organization.
South Bend White Sox at the time.
Managed a pretty famous basketball player at Birmingham.
Yeah. Number 23, Jordan. I believe.
He would be a perfect match, I think, for the White Sox because his history of development with the Indians was yearly.
What would your shortlist be? And will Craig Counsell's limited impact limit how much money teams like the Sox will be willing to pay managers next year?
That's a key question. You wonder if a guy like Terry Francona would be affordable for the White Sox. What is the going price for elite managers? The same question will be asked about Alex Cora, who is expected to be a free agent after his contract runs out with the Red Sox. That would be the beginning of my shortlist. It would be Terry Francona, see if he's interested. Alex Cora, will you pay for him, Jerry Reinsdorf? Can you afford him? Where else is he looking? And then Skip Schumacher from the Miami Marlins, who has been essentially uninvited to the party in Florida. That's a good start. Bruce mentioned Patrick Leyland, too. Patrick Leyland is Jim's son, who's in the White Sox organization. I guess that would be a name on the list. There's going to be a list. I don't think the Sox are going to bring Pedro Grifol back. They're essentially letting him finish the season so they don't have to finish paying two guys. But if I'm looking at next year's preemptive short list, it would be just that. Francona, Cora, Schumacher, maybe a younger manager in the system like Patrick Leyland. I don't know if that makes sense or not, and I think they should get somebody more established. And I do think that teams are going to ask themselves, is a manager worth what the Cubs paid for Craig Counsell? Let's hope that by the end of the season, the Cubs aren't asking themselves the same question.
The White Sox payroll is going to be real small next year, the way it looks right this second. So you could understand them. You're going to have to pay Terry Francona a lot to get him off the golf course, get him off the couch, get him off of whatever he's up to right now. You're going to pay him a lot of dough, right? But they need somebody to face the fans through the media every day that's going to get White Sox fans excited again about what's happening and be professional about it. Kind of John Fox-ish, if you will. When the Bears were going through what they were going through, at least John Fox was a professional football coach. They need to get a professional skipper to steer this ship.
You know, I find this fascinating. Bruce Bochy wanted to come to the White Sox, and they didn't want him. I think he's now 69, so what would he have been, 67 at the time? Tony La Russa is now 79. I think Terry Francona is young. I mean, you know, Joe, believe it or not, is 70. Terry Francona is like 65. I mean, he'd have plenty of good years left if he wanted to come back, and I would pay him money to come back. I think there's two questions. One is implied in this question that because of the amount of money that you're paying for a manager on the north side and the lack of bang for your buck, does that mean managers won't see their pay increase, that you'll still see that as sort of outside the norm? It's not going to – the price for paying a manager isn't going to go up because Craig Counsell got paid, unless Craig Counsell starts winning. So I think that's really an interesting idea. Terry Francona would be worth whatever you had to pay him, and you play a lot better baseball, and he's a great baseball guy. I'd be more than happy to pay him. I don't know about these other guys. I don't know. You know, I had assumed it was going to be the guy from Miami, but just because that was reported. But if they're really going to be interested in bringing in different looks at people, I like that there is a connection with Terry Francona. And he's a great guy, Tito. I mean, we'd be blessed to have a guy
like
that. LaRussa
would be the connection to Skip Schumacher.
Yes, that's my understanding. So that's why I feel like that's more likely. But this Pedro Grifol thing was a disaster. Now, who hired him? Was it Rick that hired him? And how did he hire him? How did you settle on him? He was going to do what they told him to do? Is that the idea? I don't know. But this has not worked, period, end of story. And if you look at how bad that team was when he was an assistant coach on it, how awful is their is his record with the teams he's been with, the two that he's managed, and the team he was on a bench coach for?
Historically
it's
bad.
It's unbelievable how bad this has
Anybody
been.
Anybody got a connection to David Ross?
Does a good manager want to get paid if he has options, or does he want to win, or does he want to build? I think it's difficult. David Ross would be great. Add him to the list. Why not?
Okay, that's five.
That's fine. I'd add him to the list. Yep. But, yeah, they've got to get an improved manager over there, and be great if it was Terry Francona. I'm all for it. All right, 312-644-6767, Mullion Hall on the score.
I've said it, and I'll say it over and over again. Whether we win or lose, we got to flush this game.
Mullion Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 the score. Now that is how you deal with the season. That is the manager of Southside telling you what you got to do. That's how you handle stuff.
Yeah, it's hard to watch.
Yeah,
hard to watch. And we're talking about managers because it's something we discussed over the weekend. And I think it's an ongoing debate over Craig Counsell's value to the Cubs and the impact he has made. It's a good point from the texter when we talk about what Craig Counsell has done to the managerial market. Is that a fair question to ask when I referenced earlier they're in a big game in a must-win series and they go into it with Miles Mastroboni and Pete Crow Armstrong in the lineup? That's not a roster that you necessarily trust,
right,
in a big moment. PCA is struggling to prove he's a major league hitter. Miles Mastroboni started 10 of the last 15 games, I believe, and he's not an everyday baseball player.
312-644-6767.
That's not on the manager.
Yeah, let's try Ray's in Lincolnwood. Hey, Ray.
Yeah, you were talking about Francona.
Yep.
You got to remember the last two or three years in Cleveland, he missed a ton of time because of health issues. I think that's one of the reasons he retired. So before you sign him, right, you better check out his health.
Yes.
Forget his age.
Yeah, no, there's
no doubt about that.
Well,
that's predicated on the fact that he would want to come back, and he's healthy enough to do so.
Yeah, let's try Ron. Ron's on the south side. Hey, Ron.
Look here, I have to thank you guys so much for that event Thursday. I told Brandon, used up all my energy. I couldn't do anything for the following day. But guys, just a wonderful, wonderful event. The audience, you know, happened for me, having an opportunity to meet Dustin and Brent. And of course, you two wonderful guys that I enjoy every morning. So I even had a chance to talk to Mitch for
for quite a while. So I just have to say that, guys. You all are simply the best. And the last caller made a good point that he did have some issues with health. But he is a great manager developing pitchers. And as we've been talking about, that appears to be the strength of the White Sox. So he would be actually my choice. But and hopefully, like you said, but we you definitely have to make sure that, and that he really wants to do it. You know, we don't know. You know, he's been away from the game, but Terry Francona is a great manager. But we would want to make sure that he still has, you know, the hunger and wants to get back in the game. So that's my comment. But the one we have now, I just can't wait till he's gone. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Ron.
Ron, you're the best. Yeah, that. First of all, it was a great time the other day. Really enjoyed it. And thanks to everyone who came out. And thanks to Mitch and everyone who put it on. I couldn't agree more with what Ron has to say. I mean, it's fun to think about who could come in, but just looking to put this whole kind of episode of Sox history behind us.
They just are in search of credibility. They're going to have to go into the offseason seeking that, starting right there, and then going from wherever direction they're headed. And we're going to know more about the direction they're going in the next week after Chris Getz gets done dealing.
We'll be right back with our guy Big Z, and we'll talk to Brad Biggs next. Mullion Hall on the Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.